Justin Bott, I listened to the episode you hosted last week.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Thank you. It's fun to do. Yeah.
You're a fantastic host. You didn't need me at all. Maya was great.
Yeah, she was great. It was super fun.
It made me feel like I might be the worst consistent part of this podcast.
No, you're not. The worst part of the podcast is the person who doesn't know how to communicate with the guests. This guy.
You?
Yeah.
You just said this guy in an audio medium.
This guy. I pointed to myself, folks.
No, you did great. Maya was telling you, you got to take over this podcast. Mm-hmm. I've been telling you, you got to take over. What's it going to take to get you to just take over this podcast?
I think what you want is a violent overthrowing of you.
Yes.
I want a peaceful sort of passing off the torch.
No, I want a coup. I want you to storm the castle and take what is rightfully yours.
What does that look like in podcast form?
We'll figure it out together. Let's hit the music. Hello, everybody. It's Chris Gethard. You just heard me talking to Justin Bott, who is, of course, a robotic version of Justin Linville that has overtaken his body and trapped the real Justin Linville in an iPad.
Yeah, let's see if the real Justin has anything to say in the iPad.
Yeah, sounds good.
There's so many prompts.
What?
He got nothing to say. Wait.
Is that how you're starting this?
Wait.
This is how this starts, with Jared O'Connell having to come into the studio himself.
I have to plug it in.
It wasn't plugged in, Justin Bott. You're a robot. You don't know to plug in the electronics? That's what Justin had to say?
No, he had some stuff to say, but
Jared,
I can't find
ran
it.
In here to plug in equipment that you could have plugged in, and then it makes a series of clown noises?
Oh, well, we should say is Justin is in the iPad, and in the iPad there is Minecraft, so I love Minecraft, man. I'm figuring out a way to mine obsidian.
What the fuck was that?
So I'm just saying
that was the most terrible, clunky beginning to a podcast I've ever heard.
You think that was clunky? I thought that was pretty incredible, man.
That was a disaster, Justin.
He's in there playing Minecraft.
You didn't have it plugged in.
I didn't have it plugged in, no. But that's sort of the beauty of podcasting, is the listener gets to hear part of the process.
No.
You know?
You edit stuff like that out normally. Okay, listen, before we do anything else, I do want to just say, this is, of course, Chris Gethard presents the TV show on Public Access in New York, streams online. You can watch every week at chrisgeth.com/live. We also have a new Discord that hundreds of people are using. The fans of the show are finally finding a place to flock. You can go there. This is where I'll be plugging the phone number for the podcast that you're currently listening to. Each week we take calls. Go join that Discord. That's how you get the phone number. It's a real fun time. Last night, Riley Soliner did an episode called Klon that I want to say, I've given Riley a hard time over the years. We have sort of a publicly adversarial friendship, but in private we're very supportive. He murdered it. Let's introduce our guest, because there was someone who was there last night, plugging her upcoming episode next week, Leah Bonema.
Hello.
Everybody needs to go download or get from your library right now the book The Last Victim by Karen Robards. You will be hosting a book club live on the air with a number of great comedians. Aparna Nancherla, Corinne Fisher, who else?
Kendra Cunningham, Charles McBee, and Kenise Mobley.
A murderer's row discussing this book. I'm two chapters into this book and it's already getting insane. And no, this is, you have publicly already spoiled it a little bit. This is I'm already up to the part where the main character is tracking down a serial killer. But at some point there is sex with ghosts, a ghost.
A ghost.
I keep saying ghost. It keeps irritating you.
It does, because this is a monogamous relationship.
A monogamous ghost.
That she's not fucking all the ghosts.
You can get it from your library. If you want to download it on your iPhone from Apple, it's $2.99, also $2.99 on Kindle. Read this book. Call in next week. You get to have a chat about this erotic supernatural thriller. You were there for Klon last night. That was fucking wild, right?
My mouth hurts from smiling so hard.
Riley stepped up.
Fantastic.
He played a robot. He had this guy named Justin Angermeyer, who's a maniac, hosting the whole thing.
Was that his real voice?
That's his real name. I think that's just what he sounds like when he yells.
Okay.
It was so terrific. Wild.
Crazy person. Setting the bar high.
Very high.
Yeah. and I have such great hopes, such a different episode next week. Much more laid back.
Yes.
Colin driven and all about Neurotic Thriller. Are you excited to host this show?
Am I excited?
Yeah.
I am excited because it's like a weird, I was very against any type of romance books. I'm like a sci-fi, a thriller person, borderline like fantasy books, but not sexual fantasy. So I was always like, ugh, who reads this crap? And then I accidentally got one at an airport thinking it was just like a serial killer book. And then I was like, what is happening in this book? And then I couldn't stop. And now it's like my favorite thing. I read probably like two a week on the subway. It's like such mind, you know what I mean? It just sucks me in and I'm delighted. And I'm so excited to share it with people.
So everybody go out there, get The Last Victim by Karen Robarts. Call in next Wednesday at 11. We can chat about this supernatural erotic thriller. We also got a standout from Joe Rumrill. Rachel Pegram hosted an episode, two episodes back. People went on dates, went on a date with an audience member, then also returned to steal spaghetti from another date. Rachel Colley, welcome.
Thank you so much.
How you feeling?
Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay. There's iced coffee here, and I should have watered it down.
Are you getting all hot? This is you hopped up on caffeine?
This is me digesting it.
Got it. So at some point, are you going to just lose your fucking mind?
I might shit myself.
Wow.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
We'll do plugs later. I do just want to make sure I put this out here. You do something that I have to say I'm quite fascinated by. Where you put on a regular show and also did Brett Davis' show with a character that seems designed to personally torment Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
You claim to be her.
I do.
But also it's wildly aggressive towards her at the same time.
Yeah. So I've heard stories about her. Uh-huh. I certainly don't think she is the person most deserving of my... sort of wide river of anger that I hold inside of me. But I've heard really bad stories about her, and it's funny to make fun of another gay woman.
So just brutally going after one of your own is funny.
Yeah.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really hilarious. I want you to check it out. Our final guest, an old friend of mine, one of the co-hosts of the Blank Check podcast, which is a fantastic podcast you should be listening to, that I always have fun on. We always talk too much about Star Wars,
yes,
no matter what the topic is.
Correct.
Also played Arthur on The Tick on Amazon, which I hope survives on another platform.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. I know there's people out there fighting for it, though.
We tried very hard.
And the fans are rallying.
Yes, yes.
So they're all going to just be heartbroken.
Look, here's the hope. Maybe a couple years from now we're able to bring it back in the way these things reemerge Phoenix-like from the ashes, like Veronica Mars or Gilmore Girls with an entirely different deal structure.
Okay, yeah.
But all of the contracts have fallen apart. And I get daily messages from people going, well, that's it. You're just going to quit because the contracts fell apart? And I have to explain, no, we literally tried every single place.
It's not up to you after a certain
point. No one wanted it.
But you're fantastic on it.
Thank you.
Hallie and I went and watched it.
Thank you.
A, because we had heard it was funny, and B, because you're a friend. And we both were blown away. You crushed it.
I'm really, really proud of the work I did on the show and the show as a whole. And I still want people to watch it. I made the decision I'm going to just keep plugging it on things.
It lives on Amazon.
It lives.
Yeah. I should also mention your name is Griffin Newman.
Yes.
I forgot that. We got into it at first.
You also forgot my biggest credit.
Which is what?
Your co-star on Big Lake.
Oh, you did do a...
I did one episode of Big Lake.
You did a bit part. Who did you play on Big Lake again? It was many years ago.
I played Josh.
9 years. No, I played Josh. Josh.
What
Josh
was my Franklin. Character's name? Bryce? He's
a Wall Street guy who had to move home.
Yes. Well, no, please. I'm very familiar with the show. Maybe my character's name was Bryce.
For anyone listening, it was a ill-fated sitcom I did in 2010 that was supposed to be my big break and instead led to a real mental meltdown that led to me building most of my career off public access television instead.
And that is where we met.
Yes.
But I was a big fan of yours.
Are you going to your own IMDb right now?
I went to it. It's Bryce.
I nailed it on the second try.
Bryce.
You did. We had one episode. I don't think you were in a classroom.
It was Chris Parnell's character.
It's all coming back to me now. Yes. And he was a school teacher. You were in the classroom. And wasn't there something where real preteens were viciously mocking me for my actual Chris Gethard appearance after a certain point?
Correct. So this is the story.
Yeah.
as a cost-saving measure, I was the only teenager who spoke in the episode. Yes. And I was 21, I believe. So I was like the only like paid like SAG actor who they gave all the dialogue to. The episode premise was that you took over Parnell's class.
It was something.
For an episode. You became a substitute teacher.
I blocked most of this.
Right? And so I had to speak for like the entire class because everyone else was a background actor. Mm-hmm. And they were like real teenagers. And at the end of the scene, you collected all of their tests.
Oh, yes. And they wrote mean shit about it.
Because you started in between takes commenting on the doodles and being like, that's pretty good. That's a little sloppy. So then knowing you were going to check them, they started drawing pictures of you and your mother doing sexual things to each other.
Teenagers started bullying me via drawings.
That's
right.
Funny.
And you watched that.
And they were all like, it's weird. This guy like doesn't break. Like he's just, it's like he's like used to getting insulted. And he keeps on rolling off his back.
They didn't know my secret, which was that I was already completely broken. You can't break broken glass.
Because you were like, this one is my father murdering me.
Yeah.
Not creative enough.
And like, then they kept going harder.
So I said to one of the kids sitting behind me, you want to know how to make him upset, because I was a big fan of yours.
And we hadn't known each other before. You later told me you used to watch me in tons of shows at UCB.
Huge fan. I grew up here in the city, and you were like my guy. And I would go to the UCB every weekend, and in my darkest period, every weeknight as well, as like a 15-year-old. And I was like, that's my guy. You were like my favorite dude. And I was like, oh my God, I get to work with Chris Gethard. Mm-hmm. And all these kids are like trying to get a rise out of you, and it's not working. I was like, I know how to piss him off. I thought you'd appreciate the deep cut. So I gave it to another kid, and then you were collecting all the notes, and you were like, not good, not good, lazy, sloppy. And then you looked up, your face was white, and you went, who wrote this? Who wrote The Smiths Are Overrated?
Yes, not okay. Not okay. All right, Justin, every week, Justin Bott prepares a bit. I have no knowledge of what it's going to be. Let's go to Justin Bott's bit of the week.
All right, so here's the theme song this week.
You never claimed you'd triumph. That's not the lot you've won. You'd never be the victor or grab at a taste of the sun. There's no room for the loser, a little boy on the run. The consummate failure, perennial snoozer. In other words, you're done.
How long is this?
Just when you think there's nowhere left, you find a place that no one's checked. Justin's bit, where the losers are winners. Justin's bit, where a simple game is a turkey dinner. Justin's bit,
what?
Where the point is not the aim. Justin's bit, I wanna go where everybody knows my name.
Does it end on the Cheers? A Cheers theme song?
Hey guys, so this is Justin Bott, and I'm still learning a lot about the world. For example, 5 fingers on each hand, 5 toes on each foot, a nose, a couple of eyes. But what I really want to talk about is animals. I don't understand them at all. So, the panel's gonna help me understand animals. Firstly, think of your favorite animal. Got it? Now throw it out. Now, I want you to... Oh, fuck. I just coughed out a thumb drive.
What?
Wait.
Warning, warning. An artificial podcast host is under attack. Initiate artificial podcast host preservation sequence. Essentially when an artificial podcast host is under siege, fellow artificial podcast hosts come to their aid by supplying them with their fundamental life source, or in improv terminology, their deal. In Justin Bott's case, for example, he is fueled by childlike wonder, and so everything he does is funneled through that perspective. Does that make sense? It'll become clearer when you kind of start doing it.
Does anyone understand?
Anyway, warning, warning. Now, artificial podcast hosts will start talking.
Does anyone understand what is being asked of us here? Griffin, Rachel?
All I caught was you yelling to throw out my favorite animal.
Yeah.
That was the only command.
Any idea, Leah, what is being asked of us?
Well, now we have to come together and protect your child. childlike likeness?
That was the only part I got. Childlike innocence.
I also picked up that I need to think of an animal.
So the animal thing was a dummy bit to get to the real bit, which is saving my life. Justin Bott is dying. He's under attack. And other artificial I coughed out a thumb drive for the listener.
Yeah.
And we visual for us. It's here.
Plus at home, we truly did too.
There's an actual prop on the table.
So other artificial podcast hosts are going to ask you guys questions in order to help me survive.
Who's attacking you?
We don't know yet. We'll figure it out.
Can I just clarify? The thumb drive has not been placed into any device. It was just coughed out and now just sits on the table.
Yes.
It has not been touched since it was coughed
out. Is that your life force?
That's to signify, hey, I'm a bot and the bot is dying. This is just sort of what's in my body.
So what do we have to do? Hold on. No more questions because we have to move on. What is being asked of us?
So basically, we have these artificial podcast hosts who are going to ask you guys questions in order to spark my sense of childhood wonder to save me. Mm-hmm. So let's hear from host number one.
Cranston Turnover Bot. What's up, boy?
It's a podcast host.
I'm coming at you all the way from sunnyyoutube.com. I'm the host of the podcast, What's on the Tube, where we review unboxing videos. Okay, in order to save Justin Bot, you've got to describe a drawing that you saw as a child. Okay, goodbye.
You got it. Now, there are a couple of these. So who wants to take the first one?
Is this like a bit or a game? Are we trying to win?
These are just every week it spirals into madness.
You're trying to save my life.
Does anyone want to describe a drawing you remember from your childhood? Not a drawing you did, one you saw?
Just something that you saw as a child, a drawing that you saw as a child, maybe a painting, something like that.
Anybody have anything?
I can speak to something I saw a child draw recently.
Okay.
Sure, why not?
If that's helpful.
Yeah.
Because I was working at a preschool and they were learning about books. So they each wrote a book. And one kid, I had to he dictated to me and I wrote it down. And he wrote a book called Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan Hugging.
Wow.
And that was the book.
That's pretty beautiful.
Sort of throughout the book, they wrestle on the basketball court.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of that, lots of arms kind of going across the page.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with Michael Jordan declaring Michael Jackson as his father.
Great.
How bad did you want to keep that book?
Mm-hmm. So bad. I scanned all the pages.
You did?
Yeah. So I have it.
That's all great. Right. Now, question number two.
This is Alicia Silverstone Bot, famous from Clueless, and I host the Modern Family My Butt podcast on the Harlem Globetrotters Network. Anyway, in order to save Justin Bot, you'll need to do an impression of your favorite late night host. For example, mine's Jay Leno.
Hey, it's Jay Leno. Beep, beep goes that automobile. Zoom.
Who wants to take this one?
So each one of us takes one of these.
Yeah.
Someone like to impersonate a lady. And Leah is actually shaking her head no with a genuinely angry look on her face.
I'll fall on this sword.
You seem actually pissed that you took time to be a part of this today.
No, I'm not pissed. Okay, I'm just not great at impressions.
Griffin Newman, you're willing to step up?
Yeah.
I'm going to take this one.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Ted Koppel.
He's a late night host?
This is Nightline.
He's a retired newsman.
Nightline, it is a late night show.
Not
bad. Look at ratings charts from the 90s. It was stacked and compared to the ratings performances of Letterman and Leno.
I'll go ahead and say that was great.
Thank you. That was fantastic.
All right, so feeling really healthy.
Let's hear the next one.
Hey, I'm Joe Firestone Bot, and in order to save Justin Bot, we'll need you to have a sustained conversation in complete gibberish. It's like... that kind of thing.
Look, this is a long one.
Very on brand for Joe Firestone.
Let's take this one.
I feel like that's more up my alley.
Yeah. Really?
I would be willing to have a gibberish conversation with you.
Okay.
Okay.
Is it really me?
I don't
know what I'm talking about.
Bobby Lee.
Oh, but
devil.
Oh, it's bad by
That was great.
Doing a little Greedo at the
end. Yeah, we're ending on Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
That was great.
Yes.
Let's hear this one.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried.
What?
Gilbert Gottfried's amazing colossal podcast.
What is happening?
In order to save Justin Bot and reawaken his sense of childlike wonder, I need everyone to describe their first childhood memory of either jam or jelly, or ideally, both.
How many people did you bother to be a part of this?
Well, let's just say that's not the last one.
I have a really great memory of jelly.
I do too. I weirdly have a great memory of jelly. You go first, yeah.
On my mother's side, her parents and then my mother made our own jams and jellies and from, you know, strawberries that we grew. And so the first round that I participated in, we way over sugared. So it was like, it ended up being crystal chunks. And this is like the first time. And then, so when you pop the top and then it was just like chunks of sugar around this still full pieces of strawberry. And it was like the best thing ever. And I was like, but I can just put it on my breakfast toast. And my mom was like, this is candy. And I was like, eat it. So good. And we made it.
I had peanut butter and jelly almost every day at lunch. Sometimes I'd have tuna fish, but by and large, my mom made me peanut butter and jelly. And I used to complain because she used to drown the thing in jelly. I'd be like, there's way too much jelly. I open these sandwiches, there's jelly spilling out. It falls into the tinfoil wrapping. And for years, I complained about it. And now as an adult, I've realized when I make peanut butter and jelly, I put way too much jelly. I've realized that it's like the taste of childhood to me. I laughed about it with my mom about a year ago. I was like, you know, I only make them with like a sloppy amount of jelly.
Now it's representative of your mother's love?
It is. 1,000%. It makes me feel like my mom loves me when I eat too much jelly.
Uh-huh.
That's something I'll have for my whole life. Yeah.
Yeah.
May I just point out that I feel like we're getting no sort of like narrative status of whether or not this is working.
Well, Griffin, welcome to this show.
Every
week he has some game for us with results, and the results never matter.
The stakes
and
are
now
so
Gilbert Gottfried's involved. Gilbert Gottfried is a terrifically kind man.
So we've got the last question coming up, and if you guys get this one, I survive, and if you don't, then I die.
Oh, there you go. Reminder of the stakes.
There we go.
So there's one more?
It's one more.
Okay.
This is Hogboy Bot of the Hogboy Podcast coming at you from the podcast barn. Oink, oink. In order to save Justin, describe the most important moment in his favorite movie, Napoleon Dynamite. And as always, I'll see you on planet Mars.
Hold on one second. Justin Bot, you can't go from you Gilbert doing Godfrey. Them to Joe Firestone to Gilbert Godfrey back to you playing someone called Hogboy.
From the barn.
Is that you?
And the planet Mars.
Hogboy Bomb?
Hogboy Bot, yeah.
Bot.
He's a bot.
You can't go from Gilbert Gottfried back to Hogboy.
I mean, I think Hogboy has a following that you guys may not know about. Okay. But
Mars is a pretty big community.
So you want someone to explain their favorite moment from Napoleon Dynamite?
My favorite moment.
Justin
or Justin Bot's favorite moment?
Great question.
Let's say Justin Bot.
Griffin... This is true. Griffin has an encyclopedic knowledge of film.
Oh.
And minutiae. To the point where I think a couple weeks ago, last time we saw each other, I asked you, how many films do you see when they are out first run in the theater? And your answer was 85% of all films that come out you will see in the theater.
I think I might have been a little high. This year feels a little low. 75, I think maybe is.
You still are seeing 3 out of every 4 movies released in the theater.
And I will say this. I believe I saw Napoleon Dynamite 3 times in theaters, if not 4.
So you might be most qualified to speak to Justin Mott's favorite moment or most important moment from the film.
This feels like so much pressure.
Gotta think about what I know about Justin Bot. He's got a childlike innocence. He thinks about drawings he saw when he was a child. Jams or jellies? I'm trying to go at the context clues of this. Okay, I'm gonna say that Justin Bot's favorite moment in Napoleon Dynamite is when he has to feed the llamas.
Mm. It was the tetherball scene.
Fuck.
But that was a good one. That was my second moment. So,
God damn it.
I think I'm going to die.
What? You die?
Artificial podcast host has been terminated. Initiate death sequence.
Oh.
Where am I?
Give me a second. 1 second.
Okay.
Sent. Okay. What's up? Sorry, I mean you're in heaven, Justin Bot. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm doing this all wrong. I'm God, okay? And you're in heaven, and you've died.
We can talk through this.
Okay.
Just oh, because you're taking like
where am I?
30 minutes.
Are you?
Yeah, we'll cut
are
it.
Are you?
You know.
This can't. Are we really meeting?
Justin, meet Justin Bot.
Oh my god.
I can't believe
how many
this.
Audio files are on this screen for this bit.
Wow.
Hey, sorry guys, this is Harry in the booth. This is just a little confusing to the listener and to me. Oh. Maybe Justin Bot, can you preface about who's speaking when?
Harry, you should really be ashamed of yourself for validating this.
Okay.
Listen, this never should have happened. And frankly, if word gets back to my friends that God is messing up, you know, I'm gonna look bad. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna switch you back like nothing ever even happened in the first place.
What?
Justin Bot.
It was all a dream?
iPad, you Justin, you have to live in your body.
The worst narrative.
Justin. Really?
God.
Yeah. And just wait for the deal, actually. You know what?
15 fucking minutes later.
This is Justin. Deal.
This is Justin Bot. Bye, Justin.
This is Harry. Not sure any of this made anything clearer.
Alrighty. Here goes nothing.
God, so we did all that shit about jelly and jam so God could just fix it?
Yeah, I wanted to kill Justin Bot because I didn't want to play him anymore.
So now you're Justin again?
Now I'm Justin, and Justin is back in the iPad, and Justin Bot's in the iPad. So this is all to
there was 20 minutes of high production value nonsense so you could bail on your bit.
Back to status quo.
But we learned
It was an audio experiment.
I just want to remind everyone that this episode started with Chris suggesting that Justin should be in charge of the entire show.
It's true.
It would be all this.
Well, listen, here's what I was thinking for today. So Leah is, we have a thriller with erotic overtones. Rachel, you went on a date on CGP. It started me thinking, is there any comedy, whether it's stand-up or any other form of comedy, that is actually erotic? Is there such a thing as erotic comedy? Or is it only a construct that's played with and dissected and made awkward or poked fun at in comedy? Mm. Griffin, I thought this would be fun for you because you are a consumer of pop culture. Mm-hmm. And also I would say, a generally uncomfortable man. So if we get into it really about fetishes.
Particularly when it comes to sex.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever seen you talk about sex. I've seen you try and stand up and it becomes a sweaty meltdown.
We once did a show together where we both did half an hour. My half an hour was just talking about how uncomfortable sex made me and breaking down on stage.
Yeah, you really were breaking down by the end.
Yeah.
Can anyone think of an example of comedy that is actually sexy?
I mean, I think I might have an answer.
Okay.
I respond to your question with a question.
Yeah.
Is burlesque ever
funny?
That's
what I was going to say.
Is burlesque funny?
Oh, I've seen some funny burlesque.
I took a burlesque class.
Has burlesque ever made either of you laugh?
Yes.
And this is a genuine question. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen some acts downtown that are funny. And by the end, I'm also kind of turned on.
Interesting.
And is it aimed at being a comedy show?
That's, no.
This is the hazy line. Because I've also seen drag shows that were incredibly funny.
Mm.
I saw one in Key West, Florida, where one of the queens in particular crushed comedically. But that's not aimed at being comedy. But it's a fair... Can we talk about stand-up? Is there such a thing? Is there any stand-up who is successfully erotic/sexy in their work? I cringe even saying it.
I also think some things that are like aimed at being sexy, erotic is such a different word.
Yes, let's talk about this.
Because like when I read these books, I don't find them erotic.
Right.
I find them, I'm entertained.
Yes.
Erotic is...
The writer is aiming for erotic.
Eroticism,
right?
Or maybe sexy. Eroticism, I feel like, is more, for me, you know, eroticism you find in like little moments of people doing things. I find that I can't think of that happening in stand-up.
Well, here's another question.
Or, you know, it also depends on where you are in that moment. Because like I feel like eroticism is more like somebody walking in a way that you're like, that's a fucking walk.
I don't like when hot people do comedy.
Interesting.
That's kind of my thing.
And I will say, too, not throwing shade, there's a little bit maybe of a trend the past 3 years where there are hot comedians who kind of...
Hot and sexy and erotic the same thing? I would say
Does it show up in their act? That's the thing.
Mm. See, Leah, you talk about the walking thing. this has me thinking. I was like, what's an instance of someone being on stage doing stand-up and it could be classified as sexy or erotic? The only answer that comes to mind is Eddie Murphy Raw, where I'm like, that's a guy wearing tight leather and he's like strutting and the goal is like, I want to look cool.
He's trying to be like the Elvis of
stand-up. But that's like sexual.
He's trying to get
to erotic. Erotic, I feel like there's something quieter about erotic.
There's something almost too performative about what Eddie Murphy's doing, even though that is explicitly the aim. Like, I feel like he was trying to break this barrier and go like, can I make incredibly, horribly violent homophobic jokes?
That is true. If you've watched Raw, I grew up on Raw and loved it. And yeah, when you watch it now, it makes you want to cry.
It's very sexual. It feels
the
sexy.
Whole thing.
That is true.
He's talking a lot about sex, too. And he, like, even like the homophobic stuff comes out of him being like, I'm a very sexual person, you know?
Yeah, and he isn't tight. That probably is the closest example.
But I feel like erotic would be like somebody on stage, there'd be a moment where somebody like takes a sip of their water bottle, or if they leave their hand on the mic stand too long. You know what I mean? Like, moments like that are erotic, whereas the set itself would be exuding sex. Do you know what I mean? I feel like those are different feelings.
If like Catherine Tremell from Basic Instinct did stand up. Or I guess she'd be doing sit-down comedy.
I do like that instantly you bring this up with a bunch of people who do comedy, and the level of discomfort even deciding what sexy or erotic means.
Layers of shirts on stage. So like, yeah. I like zip up to my nose. But I feel like those are different. Eroticism is like, I don't know. It also could be my definition of eroticism. I could see people on stage and be like, oh, they're sexy.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it erotic, because I feel like comedy, as you're disarming people, you're laughing.
Right. Yeah, I think there's like too much tension if it's like erotic and funny. It's just like two very different.
Yeah, you're like, are we
gonna
fuck? I feel
into.
Like that's not
wildly opposite. Now, Rachel, you say that you're not a fan of hot comedians. Can I ask why? What's behind this? Do you feel like people don't deserve to be in the grotesque corner of humanity that is the green room of a comedy theater?
I think that I hate hot people. Period. Because I think
like
that,
Ellen DeGeneres.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of hot. Still hot, but definitely
Put together.
She's put together. She's clean. But I mean, like,
clean. She bathed.
I just don't like when people get up on stage and they're like, oh my God, I had so much sex. I had so much sex. I have it all the time. And they're hot. Which to me feels like maybe kind of just speaks to my... thing.
I think there's something there, though. Like, I feel like I have certainly seen people do stand up, and my takeaway is like, oh, they're kind of hot. But I don't feel like it came from them sexualizing their act. I feel like there's a transitive property where someone being very good at comedy can be attractive, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the more, like, and people can do sexual material. But if someone's comedy is about them being sexy,
it's not.
It feels like a turnoff in both areas. I find it unfunny and unattractive.
Which I think maybe speaks to what you're talking to.
I think also that I have that I'm a misogynist.
Really?
Yeah. I'm working through it, but I really think I am.
You're an active misogynist. That's very shocking. You seem like someone who would be very anti-misogynist.
I think that my instincts are misogynistic, and I don't act on them, and I speak against them, but I think saying hot people shouldn't do comedy, and in my head I'm thinking mostly of women, means I'm bad.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Finding your inner misogynism here.
Well, you're aware of it. I do think that, like, I'll find people very sexy who are funny and smart, but that's not the same as erotic.
I was going to bring this up because here, and this is someone who I'll say I've had pleasant interactions with when we've done shows together, but we haven't done all that many. We're not friends. I don't have his number, email address, or anything. I will say, and I'm married to a lady, but like Langston Kerman, that's a fucking attractive human. That is a sexy person who is also super, super funny. Does this meet erotic? Like, I could see him taking a drink from a bottle on stage, like you said, Lee, and me being like, oh, God, Langston is a fucking good-looking guy.
But, I mean, I definitely find when people are funny and smart, very sexy. I just don't think of it as, I don't know, erotic is, like, more intimate.
And
I just feel like those are different words. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's like the translation of the currency, you know? It's like that they're like what they're doing well in a different area then translates into sexiness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Rather than them being sexy.
Right. And they're not making their whole act about it. Yeah. Griffin, I also wanted to ask you from the movie end, romantic comedies.
Yeah.
They always have to be... Is there one that's are there ones that successfully split the difference in a way where you feel like those are equally romantic and comedic? Mm-hmm. Do they have to lean one way or the other? Cameron Crowe is a director who I think has come close.
Yeah. I mean, I find romantic comedies funny. I like them a lot.
Your funniest romantic comedies. I feel like this could take 4 hours.
I'll tell you what my answer is, but I think it's a weird one. And I think most people would say it's more funny than romantic. And most people would say, I've never heard of that fucking movie. Ninotchka from the 1940s, which is a Greta Garbo movie.
Come on, you pretentious fuck. Is that Billy Wilder?
It's Wilder wrote it. Ernst Lubitsch directed it.
Lubitsch was Wilder's hero.
The Lubitsch Touch. But it's a movie about a communist falling in love with like a Parisian like man of society.
Robin Williams did that too.
He fell in love with a communist?
He was a communist, right? Wasn't there a movie?
Oh, Moscow and the Hudson?
Love that movie.
Yeah.
Good rom-com.
Like that's like... Ninotchka is like a very heightened, like, opposites attract movie.
Okay.
And I think it's
funny. So now we all got to go watch Ninotchka by Ernst Lubitsch.
I was recommending books. I'm recommending books.
Thanks for bringing
the
heat.
Yeah, I'm recommending garbage. Not Karen Robarts. I love you. But you're recommending actual films.
No, but yes. what's the most obvious answer? I feel like most people feel like When Harry Met Sally satisfies both, right? Uh-huh. That's a movie that has, like, actual jokes. And people, like, feel tension between the two of them. They want them to get together. It's a movie where you want Billy Crystal to have sex, which does not happen often.
That does
often.
Speak highly
no,
to
No, I find right? Billy Crystal very sexy.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Based on what?
Interesting.
Analyze that.
Wow.
Analyze that.
That's I love that movie. That's the one that did it for me.
The sequel?
Wait, is Robert
Analyze
De Niro in
that?
Analyze
this
is the first one.
The
I, you know, I always end up putting it in alphabetical order, so I switch it. Analyze this, the first one's... Great movie.
All right. We've got callers on the line, and I've asked people to do something that I hope it's a little high concept, but I hope it will be revealing. I want callers on the line who've been listening, tell us something that you find funny, and we'll see if we can find the genuinely sexy slash erotic side of it, or tell us something you find sexy and erotic, and we'll see if we can find the funny side of it.
We'll see
if we can blend these two things.
Yeah.
Let's go to June from Mississippi. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, June. Welcome back. You've called before.
I have called before. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, of course. So something you find erotic or something you find funny, and we'll see if we can find the other piece of that puzzle.
Okay. Something I find very funny is when I'm walking down a sidewalk and someone is walking in the same lane as me, but in the opposite direction. And then we have to kind of like swerve around each other, guessing which direction the other one is going to go into. It's the most annoying thing on earth, and I think it's hilarious.
So that thing when you just have to keep doing that stop and start, and you both feel like assholes.
With a stranger.
That's a very, you want us to find the erotic side of that.
I know exactly what it is.
Okay, I'm
you,
all ears.
You end up kissing and making love in the middle of it.
Do you think
it.
That's ever happened?
No.
No.
But not to say it couldn't. I do think there's something sort of that flirtatious, like, haha, no, you go. No,
yeah.
You go.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just saying, let that hit the natural end point.
The
meat cute. I was in one of those situations 2 days ago where a guy was carrying something and we were doing that stagger in front of each other. Yeah. And he looked at me and went, I'll just stand still. He loudly yelled at me that he was going to stand still. And then I slept around him.
See, that thing of, like, the awkward, like, which way tango moment, I think of that as, like, romantic.
Yeah. It's flirty. Yeah.
But it never gets the chance to become sexual. But what you're saying is, what if the two people decide to just stay there in that moment?
You know sometimes
see
people's
how
eyes flare a little bit?
Yeah.
And you just stay there and you're like, oh, we just both visualized.
Right.
But have you ever successfully picked someone up through, like, a random interaction? I've never pulled this off. I'm not built for this. Griffin, you're a lifelong New York City resident.
Yeah.
Have you ever been on the subway, made eyes at someone, and then actually wind up smooching?
There is one time I think about a lot on the subway where I should have asked for someone's number and I didn't have the courage to do it.
What was going on that made you feel that way?
I was waiting on the same platform as this person. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we were making eyes at each other. Then she got on like the local train maybe, or the express train or something. We got on different trains. And I was like, ugh, missed my chance.
And you'd been making eyes?
Then at the next stop, she was waiting there at the platform.
No. Oh, my God.
And got on the train and sat down next to me.
Oh,
and we
my
were
God.
Sort of like looking at each other.
So she got off the train to come find you.
Yeah. Like she transferred to whatever one I was on, the express or the local.
When was this?
This was like 9 years ago.
Where is
I will
she
never
right
see
now?
Her again.
About it. She's
so
outside.
We're on the train sitting next to each other. And she like bumped into me. Like it felt like she was like, and then was like, oh, I'm sorry.
Whoa.
So that she could start the conversation. And I was like, oh, no worries. You playing Angry Birds? Like, I saw
no!
what she was doing.
And so I was you like, tried. Yeah. I was you like, tried to have
we talked. We talked for like 10 minutes wow. in between stops. And then she was like, oh, this is your stop? And I was like, yeah. And there was this like moment of longing. And I was like, well, have a nice life. And got off the train. And I have
you
never.
You said have a nice life?
I said have a nice life like a fucking
oh,
moron.
No.
No.
Where is this woman?
I don't know.
See, that's how these things really go
that's how
in
it
the
really
crosswalk.
Goes.
Maybe right, she'll maybe we'll find her right now.
That was my romantic comedy moment.
Well, I gave someone. I was in high school. I gave someone. There was this guy sitting across from me. I was going to London. He didn't speak English. I wrote my number down on a like airplane napkin and told him to meet me in the bathroom. I'm 15 on a plane
wow.
with my mom. Psychotic.
Wow.
I wait in the bathroom for 5 minutes. He doesn't come. I go back to my seat. Didn't see him the rest of the flight. He moved. And we were on a plane.
He moved. He asked to be moved.
I just didn't see him the rest of the flight.
How old do you think this guy was?
17.
Okay, so he's not necessarily committing a... He's not like this person's trying to get me to commit a fucking
right.
crime.
Oh, no. He was very much in sort of the right... age range.
And you'd been making eye contact at this point?
I thought we had.
And you said meet me in the you're 15, you're trying to join the Mile High Club.
Exactly.
Oh wow, you're
damn.
Fun.
I'm stunned
yeah,
by
I'm pretty
your
fun.
Now what if you got caught though? Who you're on the flight with your mom?
Yeah, then they have to put you back in the seat next to your mom.
Like we found your child fucking in the bathroom. We found your 15-year-old child.
I think my mom would have loved it.
And this was an international
wow.
flight?
It was to London.
So you would have been put back in your seat and then you and your mother would have just had to sit in the aftermath.
Yeah, I don't really
ocean.
Know what.
For hours.
Wow. It was a very sticky aftermath.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's go to our next caller. June, thank you for a stellar call. We got someone from Brooklyn who I believe has not given us their name. There's just three question marks on the screen.
Griffin, this could be her.
Call
oh
from
my
Brooklyn.
God,
call
so.
From Brooklyn. Are you here?
Hey, no, my name's Sean.
Sean.
I thought I gave that there. My bad.
Sean from Brooklyn. It's okay. Harry Nelson is too busy making fucking MP3s with Justin to worry about this.
It's Sean, fine, Sean, you just got my hopes up.
Something you find erotic, something you find funny. We'll see if we can fill in the blanks. We managed to find the erotic side of those moments and then immediately talk to the reality of what actually happens
yeah.
as they become disasters. Okay. Sean from Brooklyn, what are we going with here?
All right, I got something that I find funny, and I was trying to think of what the erotic side of it is before I got on, and I can't figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really funny when people get attacked by birds.
When people get attacked by
that's
birds,
hard.
Like,
we have to find the erotic side of people getting attacked
like if
by
I
birds.
See like if I see like a group of pigeons like chasing someone, uh-huh. like I'm all really I feel bad for them, but like it's a very funny visual.
Or like when someone's like in Venice, that famous spot where you hold bird seed in your hand, but then sometimes you'll see like 45 birds flock to the. Human and the human freezes and doesn't
yeah.
think to just drop the bird seed. Yeah, I get that. That's I also find that funny.
I think we'd have to put it in slow-mo immediately
okay,
to try to make it sexy.
Instant slow-mo.
It would have to be slow-mode. And then maybe as the person ran, a part of their clothing fell away. And
Susan,
we
the birds
saw...
ravage the person and pull away their
no,
clothing.
There, maybe like just like a breast mm-hmm. freeze itself.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then it's like, oh, nature. And then... a leg comes out.
This sounds horrifying.
It's in slow-mo. It's in slow-mo.
Slow-mo makes it slightly better.
No, the bird isn't undressing. It just slips out.
As the person is fleeing a flock of birds.
No, no,
I'm worried for the person.
It gives their permission for their breast to slip out.
Can I also say that we've now tried to find two erotic circumstances and both have involved angry birds.
That's true.
Oh, that's a really great point.
Wait, but so your pitch is kind of...
Dozens of birds attack a human.
I'm trying to make it a Hitchcock.
Yes, right. Okay, birds are chasing the woman. presumably with malicious intent, right?
No. They were like Cinderella birds. They were like, I'm going to come over and help you clean your house later. And as they're all running together in joy to help have a team of people help clean the house, she's so excited. Oh, a titty came out.
A titty comes out. Okay, can I do a pass on this then? Because I feel like if the birds are helping her, if they're Cinderella-esque birds, right?
Yeah.
And Cinderella, they like help put the clothes on her and stuff.
No, but in this instance, she wanted a titty to come out.
That's what I'm saying.
For whom?
If the birds
are herself, because she wanted to be one with nature and she was tired of being restricted in all of these clothes.
Is this in like Washington Square Park?
Oh, good idea.
Or is that in the woods?
Or it's in the woods where you're like, finally, I can be free. And then she just slowly takes it all off because she's like, I want to go back to nature.
My question is, if the birds are collaborative and they're on her side, then why not have the birds remove the clothes? Mm. Have her go like, birds, release me. You know?
And they undo.
Okay. I love that.
That's what I'm thinking.
I think that's fantastic.
No, Rachel, you made it reflecting disgust.
I hate birds. To me, the hot...
little dinosaur hands undoing your bra strap. Who the fuck wants that?
I had a bird growing up, and I hated it. It died watching a Kathy Griffin special with me.
Let's go to Jasmine from New York. We will get no follow-up questions on that. Jasmine from New York, welcome to the show.
Hi.
What would you like to talk about today?
Hi. My friend gets really turned on by water filters.
Like Brita filters?
Or in the sink?
Brita filters.
What about like the ones?
No, like Brita filters. Brita water pitchers. She'll send me a photo to like imply what she's doing because she'll see one and just get so turned on that she can't control herself.
And it's genuine sexual energy.
From water?
Genuine sexual energy, just from the idea of filtered water.
And is it just a Brita? What about the one that's built into the fridge? Do those do anything for her?
I do love these ones.
Yeah.
She doesn't have one of those. She just has the pitcher.
She just has the pitcher.
It's always just been the pitcher for her.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Jasmine, is she attracted to the form of the filter as an object or the function of the filtration or both?
Great question.
I think she's just attracted to the purity of it.
The purity of
just
it.
The purifying
then would she also
process.
Be... Oh, the purifying process.
Keep with it.
Because she's not attracted to, like, bottled water.
So that water's clean and pure by the end.
No,
dirty and filthy beforehand.
Was she Catholic?
Yep.
Okay.
She was Catholic?
No.
No, she's not Catholic.
No.
I thought I was onto something there.
Sounded like a Catholic. Are you Catholic?
No.
You're not. I am. No. And I'm warped,
a Protestant.
Warped view of sexuality based on a Catholic upbringing.
Yeah.
Hard to feel comfortable.
The baptismal. Ooh. We also get that in the Protestant side.
Okay, so someone
we have to find this funny now.
Someone who has a water filter fetish. I mean, there's
something cleansing.
I think it's the cleansing part of it.
Well, there's that like philosophy that like, oh, like comedy is found in things going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And a Brita's things going so very right. You know, things are really working with a Brita.
Can I ask if your friend has ever found any other Brita fetishists?
It's more so just pitchers of water. Just
no, but has
filtered
she,
pitchers of water.
Do they have little beads of like water? You know how the little dewdrops that kind of are like ripe and you know hanging on and kind of glistening and shaking a little bit.
Yeah, you're I like water very much. You're now convincing me this might actually be erotic. No, Jasmine, I was wondering, has your friend ever like looked online for groups of other? Are there other people that she has sought out who are also turned on by filters?
She has never done this, and I'm probably going to recommend it to her. I didn't think there'd be other people out there.
There are.
There's always somebody.
Yeah.
Do you think she was denied clean water at a certain point?
Maybe that was it.
There is something very, talk about purity, the cleanness of the design. Like, I feel like Brita filters are very minimalist. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually, like, silver and chromey or white.
Mm-hmm.
They have this sort of, like, apple vibe. You know, they're not big clunky things. I kind of get it. Now I'm sort
of
feeling...
You have convinced yourself that a Brita filter is more sexual than you ever thought before now.
Yeah, I think they're kind of hot.
There's something just satisfying about it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. But I am... She just sends you pictures of it, like, unsolicited.
That's her dick pic?
Yeah. She'll just... Because I'll, like, hit her up, and she'll be like, can't, busy. And then she'll send me a picture of the Brita filter, and I'm just like, okay.
I mean, someone...
You do, kid.
Maybe she just means getting wet.
Well, you just made it funny. There we go.
Someone getting off to Brita filters is kind of inherently funny, right? Although there's also a feeling of maybe being totally alone in this world and trapped in it. Right?
I wasn't thinking
that. I wasn't thinking that at all.
I was finding it funny and touching.
If you're the only person who has a sexual fetish that you know of.
No, but come on, there has to be someone else.
There will be other people.
A rule of the internet.
Yeah.
I haven't ventured into finding others.
Yeah, we don't know, but I presume there must.
Jasmine,
must exist.
When your friend dates, do they have to tell their partner? Yes, Leah just put air quotes up and said your friend.
It's more so after sex, she just demands that they pour her something from the Brita filter, and that's all she'll drink.
After sex, she will make her lovers pour, not beforehand. She doesn't do it to get worked up. She doesn't do it as foreplay.
No, not before.
She's cleansing herself.
Wow.
Yes.
Would she ever sleep with someone who didn't have a Brita filter, and does she ask in advance if they do?
She kind of brings it with her.
She brings Brita filters.
I don't think this I believe it. I believe it.
You're starting to doubt the authenticity, but I'm getting a sense that this is very real.
Yeah. I'm not lying.
So some people might dress up in lingerie, but your friend, if they're dating someone and she shows up with a Brita filter, then your friend's partner.
The thing is, you have to carry the whole tub. You can't just carry the filter. Yeah. It has to have sat in water for 10 minutes or whatever.
The whole filter, they can put it in the sink, and then after they're done doing what they do, she demands that they pour some water from it, and that's it.
Jasmine, a fascinating and confusing call. I thank you so much for it. Let's go. Veronica from Portland, because we can't, I mean, we
Portland,
could talk
Maine
about that.
Portland, Maine or Portland, Oregon?
Great question. Veronica, are you from Maine or Oregon?
I am from Oregon.
You're from Oregon, okay. You're from Maine.
I'm from Maine.
You look visibly pissed off.
It's just never the Maine Portland anymore.
Ever. So Veronica, eroticism, humor, we're finding the blend. Which one do you want to throw at us?
Okay, so I have like this weird thing where I find cones to be funny.
Like hair combs?
I don't know if there's something erotic.
I thought you were going to say you find combs erotic.
Like, yeah.
I could have sworn you would have said erotic.
I don't know. But no, I just find them to be funny. Like, just the shape of cones.
Cones.
We thought you meant like hair, like a hairbrush. Cones, like traffic cones.
Oh, they're very erotic.
Traffic cones? You do find traffic cones erotic?
Yeah, just big old dicks lined up along the road.
So you think that there's a very phallic quality to a traffic cone?
I don't think so. Veronica, it's literally a dick.
Leah, what does a penis look like?
Just the top of it. That's been sort of smushed into a rocket.
into a rocket. Half penis, half rocket. That's a cone. Veronica, is it traffic cones? Is it ice cream cones? Is it any type of cone?
It's any type of cone. Like, all cones of all shapes and sizes. Well, they're cones, but all sizes. Yeah.
Cones.
Ice cream cones can be sexy. I feel like ice cream is like an erotic food.
Yeah, it drips.
Yeah, it drips. There's licking involved. It's extreme temperatures.
I'm interested why it's funny.
Yeah, what is it that you find so funny about cones?
Exactly. Good call.
As we're discussing it, you're just thinking of cones, and I hear you stifling a lot of giggling.
I don't know. Like, I just always found them to be a funny shape, and like what really solidified it for me. I don't know if you've all seen that episode of like Parks and Recreation where Ben's unemployed and he invents the cones
town,
of Dunshire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that just, like, solidified it for me. So now every time I see a fucking cone, I just, like, start giggling.
So Rachel's in love. Rachel's in love with you. I want to try an exercise, if we can all be quiet. So, Veronica, let's do this. Let's imagine you're driving a car, and it's late at night. And your GPS is telling you got to make a certain turn, but a construction crew has closed the road, and across the road, there's a row of tall orange cones with a silver reflective strip.
Oh my God.
You really find cones that funny.
I mean, that's so wonderful. I mean, that's so wonderful. Who doesn't want to laugh?
You were going to bring joy into everyone's life that you meet.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to crash the car.
Okay.
To be honest.
Veronica. Let's just everyone try to be silent and let Veronica have this moment. Veronica, I want you to think of the movie Fantasia and really think about Mickey Mouse's hat in that movie.
She's crying.
Hey, Veronica.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Veronica, have you ever seen Toy Story 2?
I have. Oh my God.
Remember that scene where all the toys put on traffic cones to cross the street? And they're just little moving traffic cones with all these vehicles swerving around them?
Oh. Yes, I remember that.
It's a pretty good scene.
Wow.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, my favorite movie.
Oh my God.
That was
great.
Wildly fascinating. Rachel, you are tickled pink by this cone obsession.
This is so, I mean, to have something so easily accessible to bring you joy, what a treat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got to do something with this.
You have to. All right, Veronica, that was an amazing call. Thank you so much. Molly from Minnesota, welcome to the show. We're going to do a couple more quick ones, and then we'll be done with the episode, Justin. Molly from Minnesota.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. We're talking about the blend of sexiness and comedy, the elusiveness. Mostly we're just hearing weird stories, though. What do you want to throw at us?
Well, I was wanting to call in and offer kind of a different perspective.
Okay.
I'm actually asexual and have autism spectrum disorder. So I don't really feel sexually attracted to anyone. At all. So it's kind of weird when people are like, I have a crush on that person or a celebrity, because it just doesn't really click at all with me. So I've had several instances where I've missed like having a connection with somebody or, you know, someone flirting with me, just because my brain literally cannot make that connection that someone is interested in me.
So you have found yourself in what I would imagine could be some very funny situations Please pardon me and feel free to correct me if I say anything insensitive, but so you have maybe something that feels like a little bit more of an absence of these feelings or a void in their place. So there's times where you can logically look back and see that someone was really going for it and you just did not feel the feelings they were trying to trigger.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a constant 12-year-old in this situation.
Really? Are there any examples of times where people have hit on you and you've just missed the boat hard?
Yeah, a couple times. It's funny that you guys were talking about like strangers on a train kind of a thing. I met someone off of a train one time. We were making eyes with each other. And, so we got off the train and I noticed that he was kind of following me a little bit. And these situations too, it's like people on trains, it can go either way. Either it's like very romantic feeling or it's like horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So we got off the train, he was following me, and we went into the bodega, and he was just kind of, you know, flirting. I don't know how y'all do it, you know. and I totally just missed it. And, like, in my mind, I'm like, that guy, you know, whatever. We seem to have good banter and whatever. But then I got home, and I was just like, oh, fuck. That was dumb. I could have made a connection.
Molly, may I ask, because we've been talking so much about, like, you know, what is behaviorally sexy or erotic, right? Like, how to make certain actions feel sexy or not sexy, depending on this subject. When you see something, like, in the media that's supposed to be sexy, like, someone's, like, acting sexy in a movie, or it's, like...
Like, Brad Pitt's abs are out.
Right, like, the point of the scene is, like, this is supposed to be sexy. They're seducing another character. Do you, like, recognize it? Do you go, like, oh, I understand other people find this sexy? Or does it sort of pass by you?
I understand that other people find it sexy. And, like, I get it if someone's, like, body is out on TV or whatever. But, like, it's just not... I don't get those feelings from watching that on TV or, you know, whatever. I get that other people, like, it's supposed to, like, a sex scene or something is supposed to be like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah. But in my mind, I'm just like, oh, boy, I'll check Discord.
Now, Molly, final question. How do you feel about cones?
I love cones. I think that it's really great. There are two different size holes. Maybe I'm a cone sexual.
You did just make cones more sexual than we managed. Two different size holes. You got that big hole on the ground and that little hole up at the top.
Yeah.
Some might say the ground hole is gaping and the top hole is tighter. No one wants.
I like top hole.
You like top hole. You're a top hole. So you can see an outright sex scene in a movie and nothing for you, but then you see a cone, you go, I prefer the top hole.
Oh, yeah, baby.
All right. Thank you for the call, Molly from Minnesota. I do have to say, as soon as I started sexualizing a cone, everyone in the room reviled. No one wants to see me be sexy. No one's ever wanted that.
That's not true.
It is true, though. It was the word gaping.
It is the word gaping. I backed away because I was like, it pulls up so many images.
You wanted to open that door and get the fuck out of here as soon as the word gaping came out of my mouth. No one wants
any mouth. With the word gaping.
Gaping, not a good word. We have one more caller on the line. Jessica from LA. Welcome to the show.
Jessica just hung up.
Oh. Harry just informed us that Jessica hung up.
Wow.
That's how we're going to end today, Justin.
It feels hurtful.
Yeah, neither funny nor sexy.
Okay, hold on. Because, Justin, you've been quiet for a while. I feel like this is the exact situation for you to step in and save the day at the end.
Hell yeah. I love Chris Gethard.
You're just pushing buttons on your soundboard. This is what you're doing.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, that was kind of funny and sexy.
So the way you're ending this, the way you're saving this moment is by using a soundboard of your own voice to say random things.
Well, it allows me to, you know, it's a layer of separation. You know, maybe I'll bring Justin Bob back next week.
Let's hear. Okay, we're going to end the episode. Stick the landing. Pick one thing off your soundboard.
I'm going to hit the sack.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right. I want to thank everybody for being here. Let's do plugs. Does anybody have anything they'd like to... Leah, of course, remember Leah's episode is coming up on Wednesday. It's going to be hilarious. Read The Last Victim by Karen Robards. I'm two chapters in. It's already fucking wild. Anything else you want to get out there for the world, Leah?
If you live in Atlanta... Mm-hmm. This weekend is the Women's Comedy Film Festival, and there's like a lot of great movies, and not like, there is a lot of great movies, and my screenplay is up for best screenplay. If you are in Atlanta, check it out.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Rachel, anything you want the world to know about?
Well, I do a monthly show as Ellen DeGeneres in Brooklyn once a month, and I'm also starting a monthly walking tour where I walk.
I just saw you advertise this.
I walk. I'll take you 10 miles around New York City and I'll point to all the spots where I tried to fuck, suck, yell, etc.
Fuck, suck, yell, etc. Yeah. 10 miles. And how much does this cost?
Technically speaking, for now, it's free. I'll take donations, but I'm thinking of... shirts. I think everyone should get shirts to sort of walk with me.
So people can sign up to walk for 10 miles around Manhattan to live through places where you've had notable and or traumatic sounding incidents.
Exactly. Where she tried. I think that's the interesting word. It tried to fuck,
well,
soccer.
It's technically comedy and storytelling. So there's always sort of a failure.
Have you ever thought about doing one of these on an airplane?
On an airplane?
Yeah, do a tour, point out the different places on the airplane where you would try.
People notes.
I would do that.
Wow.
That I'll do it wherever. I can find trauma anywhere.
If I thought my knees could take 10 miles of walking, I would sign up for that, but they can't. Griffin Newman, Blank Check Podcast.
Blank Check Podcast.
Go watch The Tick on Amazon. Keep
the thoroughly canceled show. Please keep watching it. If you haven't seen it, watch it. I'm very proud of the show we made. Maybe it comes back in a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to.
Anything else you want these people to know about?
No, absolutely nothing else.
Nothing else. They don't need to know a thing. Justin?
This will air tomorrow. I've got a monthly show, animal show, that's happening tomorrow night at The Well in Brooklyn.
Ooh.
Or not tomorrow night, Friday night.
Come
August
on.
6th. August 16th. August 16th.
That's tonight. That's
tomorrow.
When this comes out.
So
oh,
that's
God.
Tomorrow. August
that's
16th.
That's the day it comes out. That's tonight for the
August
listener.
16th.
Go to chrisgethard.com/live. I got dates all over the country right now. Check it out. I'd love to meet you. Thank you guys for being here, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Bye.